Good afternoon. It's 12:32 here at KSRO. I'm Dale Tresillos, and this is Ask the Expert. And today we're talking with Roy Miller from Hanson & Miller Law Firm in Santa Rosa. Good afternoon, Roy.
Good afternoon. Good to see it's dry, at least for the next day or so.
Well, mostly dry, I think, as we knock on wood.
Yes.
Really. Quickly, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was amazing. We got to host our first Thanksgiving in our new home. My family hosted my brother and his family, and it was special. And to not be on the road for Thanksgiving was amazing after doing it for the previous 2 years.
Yeah, being on the road is just, it's not good.
No, it's awful.
No, it's not. But we are here to talk just about the, you know, just the case with the PG&E and just everything just regarding Tubbs Fire, Camp Fire, and just all the litigation around that. What's the latest litigation news just regarding the case with PG&E, a possible settlement, or even just the next step in the bankruptcy?
Well, we're finishing the discovery process and the trial for the Tubbs Fire. The discovery process will wind up at the end of this week. So we have some depositions scheduled actually with one of our clients at the end of this week, who was one of the people nearest the Tubbs Fire start. The settlement discussions have been ongoing. There have been ongoing mediations with a retired federal judge, 60 people in a room, and a lot of back and forth regarding numbers, regarding how it's financed, regarding cash versus stock. There's been a lot of discussion.
Sounds like Congress.
It's no, because there's actually progress. And so that's a big difference between our discussions and what's going on in Congress right now, sad to say. So there's progress being made. I'm hopeful that we are going to have a resolution as to the number. The overall number, I'm hoping to have a resolution within the next week or two. But it is, of course, subject to change because these are negotiations. The governor is now involved. The governor has been looking at different things. So it's something that is a fluid situation, but it's moving in a very good direction. The bankruptcy is still on its own track. Mm-hmm. The court case for the Tubbs trial is on its own track. But what we're hopeful is that if we get a resolution in place, that will mean the Tubbs trial, the federal court estimation trial, all will go away, and then we'll be able to present finished plans for the bankruptcy court to approve in the spring. So PG&E can exit the bankruptcy process next June as scheduled.
How come that it would take so long from an announcement of a settlement to just kind of the execution of it?
Well, because when you agree to a number, mm-hmm. Then you need to agree to a process because you have thousands of people that have claims. Some people have smaller claims. They evacuated, maybe they had a little bit of smoke damage, versus people like my family who lost everything. And then there are families who lost loved ones. So there are a wide range of losses, business and personal. So they need to be categorized. And there needs to be a fair and transparent process about how the claims are administered, and we need an administrator appointed by the bankruptcy court. I have a feeling I know who it is. It's the same person dealing with the emergency fund that's been set up. Mm-hmm. So once the rules are in place, then we get the claims presented, and then the processing of those claims and ultimately payouts can go. But the bankruptcy court needs to know how the process will work before they approve it.
Now, do clients have to approve this themselves, or is it just left up to the attorneys?
Well, the attorneys are going to make recommendations for their clients. So once we get an agreement in place, we'll take a look at it. I'm pretty sure, given my group's position, you know, we're one of the main negotiators in this. I expect that this is going to be something I'll recommend to all my clients. In the end, the individual client could decline and want to have a separate trial. That process would be worked out at the end, and that's assuming that there's money left over after all the other agreed claims are paid. So in a bankruptcy process, I don't see as much room for people to say, hey, look, I want my trial. Mm-hmm. I think it is much wiser for people, once we have all the process worked out and we've explained it in a series of meetings to our clients and how it gets broken down, that our clients will accept it because they too want to move on. They obviously want to get compensated, and a lot of them are needing this to complete rebuilds or to actually do rebuilds or to move on to the next stage of their life, whatever that might be.
Mm-hmm. And of course, just with the big news within the last month was the claims deadline extension being going on now till December 31st. That stays no matter what if a settlement is reached this week.
Correct? That stays no matter what. So if there's a settlement that's reached this week, then people who have not yet decided to opt in have until for us it's December 23rd to opt in, and the process of signing up is very quick. It can be done via email if necessary and PDF for those that are technologically inclined. And then once the claims deadline passes on the 31st for 2017 and 18 fires, that's it. Kincaid is going to be dealt with separately. I expect, though, that they're going to be on a short deadline as well, probably March, maybe April, because they need to be administered and finished before that June deadline so PG&E can emerge from bankruptcy on schedule.
Is that the main reason why you're expecting a settlement this week and not maybe after the deadline when PG&E might have a clearer picture of what they're up against?
PG&E doesn't my surmise, again, this is my opinion, is okay. PG&E does not want to take a chance at the Tubbs trial. That is set for January 7th. Mm-hmm. That is a trial I do not see PG&E wanting to conduct because I don't think they are going to win. And I don't think they want to take a chance with a jury coming in with a number that will skew everything. Having a settlement that you know all the details about as a defendant is much better than rolling the dice at trial, and I don't think they want to do that.
Let's go over just the claims process and categories for losses that victims can file. You're hearing this, maybe you've been following this definitely for the last couple of years, and you're thinking, well, maybe I should file a claim right now. What do new claimants need to know?
Well, our minimums are $25,000 of underinsured loss because that's what the triggering amount is for a state court case. So if you're underinsured on your losses by $25,000 or more, that is a case we can take. There are people that may have less that can file directly on their own with the bankruptcy court if they wish. But if people have a $25,000 loss or more, they're eligible. For businesses, it depends on if they also had some smoke damage or fire damage. If they had no smoke or fire damage, I do not believe they would be eligible. Those aren't cases we can take. But most of our cases are revolving around homeowners with damaged homes or more likely lost homes. Mm-hmm. All of those are eligible. And it's a matter of filling out a fee agreement and a couple of bankruptcy court forms, and then you're done. We'll get the proof information from their insurance stuff within the few weeks after that.
What about if you've already filed a claim or collected a claim from your insurance agency? Are you still able to file a claim against PG&E?
Yes. So the insurance claim process and the PG&E process are separate. All of our insurance companies have reached an agreement with PG&E to resolve the insurance part of it. So the insurance companies will be taken care of. The individual person, the families, can have their own claim. There's no crossing of the stream, so to speak. They're separate.
Mm-hmm. What about, and I'm hopefully this is just very minor in the grand skew of things, but what about injury claims? How do they differ?
The injury claims are the only difference is that we're going to have an additional category, which is medical records. So we had clients that fought the fire that were elderly and fought the fire on Fountain Grove, and one of them suffered a broken ankle and then had to make an escape on a broken ankle. So we have that medical record. We have a number of clients in the Sonoma area. And so the city of Sonoma was at the confluence of three different fire complexes, Tubbs, Nuns, and Atlas. Mm-hmm. And they received smoke inundation from all three fires. And a lot of them had pulmonary issues, lung issues. And that's documented in medical records. So those will be included as well, because that injury is a separate category on top of home damage and emotional distress.
And speaking of emotional distress, how does that work?
How that works is going to depend on the claims process itself. Once we get that top line number resolved, we need to figure out how the emotional distress number factors in. It could be a function of a percentage of the insurance policy. It could be a function of the percentage of your underinsurance. It could be a function of the value of your home or your rental property. We're not sure yet. We've been advocating to have it be pretty uniform, because it doesn't matter whether you lived in Coffee Park and you had two beds and a TV to your name, or you lived on Sky Farm with $3 million of uninsured loss. To me, you if you fled for your life and lost everything, to me, that is the same. But how that gets worked out is something that will be sorted once we get the top line number resolved.
And then lastly, how are legal costs usually handled just between clients and Hanson and Miller?
Okay, so the legal costs are handled by the fee agreement that each of our clients sign. In bankruptcy, however, quite often the bankruptcy judge will decide what the fee will be, regardless of what the fee contract is. So a lot of lawyers came in here teasing like a credit card teaser of 20%, but then their rate goes up to 40% and all this other stuff. Ours was a flat third. The bankruptcy judge may very well come in and say, we're going to have a separate fund designated for attorneys based on the claims that they present. Okay. And you work it out, it's going to wind up being down in the 20s somewhere. That's what it's going to be.
Okay. It's a 12:43 here at KSRO. Again, that deadline is the 31st. It's going to be still, though, the 24th for your group.
Yeah, so 23rd for Hanson and Miller.
Christmas Eve.
Yeah, it gives us
23rd.
Yeah, okay. It gives us a chance to process the claims and give my staff some time at Christmas.
Ooh, got to get in time for the eggnog.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. 23rd at Hanson and Miller. Again, their law offices are located at 415 Russell Avenue in Santa Rosa. If you do have a question for them, it's at 707-575-1040. That's 575-1040, or online at firejustice.com. What's the basic information that they do need to just get a claim started?
Your IDs, the address where the property was lost, filling out a fee agreement, and a couple of pages of bankruptcy questionnaires, and you're good to go.
And then the rest comes later?
The rest will come later. Okay. I want them to enjoy their holiday with their families.
Yes, as everybody should this time of year, no matter what your situation
is.
And hope everybody out there, just on a side note, has a happy holidays on that. It is 1244 at KSRO. We're going to take a quick break here at Ask the Expert. When we do come back, we'll talk more just about just the latest news with PG&E, including just a report from the CPUC and the campfire.
The Kincade fire was preventable. PG&E failed to turn off its high voltage transmission lines even when they turned off the other lines in the same area during one of their first of many PSPS events. I'm local attorney and fire survivor Roy Miller. My family rebuilt our home, which burned in the Tubbs fire that PG&E caused. We then evacuated that rebuilt home during the Kincade fire. Enough is enough. We need to hold PG&E accountable for its bad conduct, or they will just keep doing it over and over again. We work on a contingency fee, so if you lost your home or business in the Kincade fire, call us at 575-1040. Hanson & Miller represents thousands of fire victims, and for us, it's personal. It's about saving our community. Come to a meeting this Thursday from 6 to 7 or Saturday from 10 to 11 at 415 Russell Avenue in Santa Rosa.
Roy Miller is responsible for this ad.
5,000 years of Chinese music and dance in one night. Shen Yun Performing Arts will take you on an extraordinary journey from ancient dynasties to the modern day. Shen Yun, coming to Berkeley, San Jose, and San Francisco starting December 20th. Buy tickets now at shenyun.com. That's S-H-E-N-Y-U-N.com. That's S-H-E-N-Y-U-N.com. Or call 888-633-6999.
Great news! Shen Yun is graciously providing round-trip shuttle bus service to Shen Yun performances December 31st and January 4th for the 2 p.m. shows. Pickup time is 11:30 a.m. at Greaton Resort and Casino in Roanoke Park. The cost is only $20 for the round trip. For all the details and to book your seats, visit shenyun.com/sf. That's shenyun.com. shenyun/sf.
I'm Daniel from Atlas Pavers, inviting you to the grand opening of our new showroom in Santa Rosa. We'll have refreshments and you can get 10% off your qualified project for just coming by. Joining us will be the Mark West Chamber and Annie from Coffee Strong.
Hi, this is Annie. Atlas Pavers is donating 3% of every job to the Fire Rebuild Neighborhood Projects.
That's Saturday, December 7th, 9 to 5, with a ribbon cutting at 2, 1710 4th Street in Santa Rosa. Online at atlaspaversco.com.
Matthew at Corex here, inviting you to join us this Friday from 5 to 7 to meet all the local artists currently displayed at the Corex Gallery. Then, on Saturday the 7th, is Korik's Holiday Open House from 12 to 5. Games, music, refreshments, and Korik's third annual Jewelry Trunk Show. Then Sunday, a small set of artists demonstrates a unique Art in Progress exhibit from noon until 3. And don't forget, Korik's validates garage parking. Happy holidays from all of us at Korik's.
Talk 47 at KSRO. I'm Dan Tresillos, and this is Ask the Expert. Today we're talking with Roy Miller from Hanson and Miller Law Firm in Santa Rosa, just on the latest surrounding the PG&E bankruptcy case and filing a wildfire claim before the new deadline of December 31st. Of course, with Hanson and Miller, that's going to be December 23rd. You can start that process by going to their offices at 415 Russell Avenue in Santa Rosa. Also by calling their phone number 707-575-1040 if you have any questions there, or at firejustice.com. And we were just talking a bit about just the process, really, of just how to file a claim. And now we just want to get into the list, the latest news with PG&E. The latest thing just really as of today was a new report from the California Public Utilities Commission had released a report that's saying that PG&E had failed to inspect a tower just that was key and central to the campfire. And apparently they hadn't inspected it since 2001, and apparently just a look at it could have avoided the campfire in total. What does just hearing that? What's just kind of your overall impression of that?
Not shocked. The reason I'm not shocked is because the Tubbs fire. Looking at what happened during the Tubbs fire, looking at the age of some of the equipment involved. And now the PUC identifies that jumper cable, which was broken on the tower up by the dam where the campfire started, had been there. That cable was there for up to 17 years and could have been fixed at any time. That is, in a way, it's shocking. But given what we've seen to date with PG&E and their maintenance habits, it's not terribly shocking. Because if you put profit before safety, this is the inevitable result. It's sad that there was something literally sitting there for years that could have been fixed that wasn't, that cost dozens of lives and destroyed an entire town.
Now, typically, how often are lines supposed to be inspected?
The basics of it are that the utility is required to regularly inspect their lines. It doesn't say you have to look at it every week or every month. Okay. You have to do regular inspections. And one thing that's interesting that also came out this week is that there is a predictive tool that was developed by an engineer at Texas A&M where you can remotely be able to find out that there is an issue with a line simply by this tool being used to remotely check on certain aspects of connectors and insulators and lines themselves to enable power companies to do either repair or what's called predictive maintenance. There is a thing in airlines where basically they use data to predict when a part is going to fail. Mm-hmm. And rather than have your plane break sitting here in Santa Rosa and having to get a guy up from San Francisco to fix it, that plane will have had that part replaced at the maintenance base in Denver, for example, well before the failure. This predictive maintenance will be a godsend for the utility industry because then they can go out and preventively maintain their equipment without having these catastrophic failures that result in these massive fires. I think it's an example of technology catching up with power line delivery is not a new technology, and this predictive tool will be very helpful.
It's a software tool.
It's a combination of software and hardware. Okay. It's not that expensive. PG&E's been evaluating it for, I believe, the last year. I am hopeful that if the PUC doesn't flat out require it, that PG&E will use that high-priced PR firm they like to use to roll out some splashy ads showing how they're now going to be using this tool to better protect all of us.
Okay. Well, in either case, we do hope that they do get the tool, if it is proved reliable, to update that to their entire system. And they are actually in the midst of testing that now, as well as SoCal Edison.
Yes.
As well. Is this kind of sound familiar just with the lack of inspection with the Tubbs case?
Well, no, because no. you you have a system that's very large, mm-hmm. and you have a utility that is a for-profit utility. There's going to be a natural tension between spending money on maintenance and upkeep and getting the money turned back to investors. That's sort of predicted. The problem here is that there was such a imbalance between maintenance and profit that you had lines that may have not been inspected for many, many years, if not decades. Basically, they may not go out unless the line literally drops on the ground or a customer literally loses power. And as we've seen over the last 2 years, that doesn't work out very well. So they need to be able to do more physical inspections, but utilize the technology that's now out there to help have technology help identify issues for them so they can fix them without being in an emergency in the dead of night or in the middle of a possible fire situation.
Now, as I said, this new report just came out within the last day or so, and it's under the new president of the CPUC, Maribel Bashir. What has the Utilities Commission's role been with these negotiations, or even just managing PG&E?
Well, the PUC in the end is going to have to find that the settlements are in the public interest. So they will look at various proposals and have to give their blessing to it. The PUC in the past has been pretty terrible at oversight when it comes to utilities, but the PUC is also being turned over. Their personnel are being turned over, and this individual is new to the job. But I think that this person is showing promise in being more proactive and having the utilities do what they need to do. And keep in mind that the governor has made it a very strong political point on his part to flog the utilities, mm-hmm. especially PG&E, which is why he is taken such an active part in the negotiations on settling this case, and why he, I think, in the end will lean on PG&E heavily to invest in their grid to get these upgrades done so that the risk of fire to all of us goes way down.
Now, in what ways can the governor lean on PG&E? Just from a verbal standpoint?
It's more than verbal, because the legislature passed new laws regarding maintenance of power lines that is administered by the PUC over PG&E. Mm-hmm. Also, the state now has more of an ability to do proper forest management. And thinning of trees at times and clearing of undergrowth is not a bad thing. Fire is a natural cycle of nature. And if you say you have a lightning strike, that fire will then burn the undergrowth and some of the fuels that are available, which will prevent a catastrophe in the future. But if you have a heavy fuel load plus an ignition source like we had in 17 and 18, you will then have catastrophic fires because you have had very little forest management and a lot of fuel growth that's out there very dry. So you have new laws and you have new regulations and a governor that's willing to employ them. That means that I would hope to see over the next few years them focusing on the fire-prone areas, and they've got these nice computers that can tell them where the dangers are to get the work done in those places first.
As for PG&E's future itself, what's probably the best interest of consumers and even victims just on what should PG&E look like after this whole process of several months ahead?
Well, once the bankruptcy process is complete and we're in the latter half of 2020 and into 2021, there will be a discussion about what the future should be for for-profit utilities in California. Because I don't fault people for making a profit, that's fine. The problem here is that you have a very large transmission system and you have a lot of maintenance that has been not done for decades. It's going to take a tremendous amount of money to do that. And if you have a mandate to pour billions of dollars back to your investors, which is the standard way of doing things for privately owned utilities, that money won't be available for maintenance, upgrading, training of crews, and such. So do we have a municipal-owned utility statewide? Mm-hmm. Do we have places like Santa Rosa buying infrastructure and then managing it themselves, maybe with power backup from people like Tesla? Who knows? Or are we going to simply tighten the regulations more on the investor-owned utilities to try to get them in line? I tend to think that there's going to be a very serious discussion had. I can't predict it now. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that the current president of PG&E came from the Tennessee Valley Authority, the largest public-owned utility in the nation. He did his job there well, but he had a different boss. The boss there were the municipalities that made up the TVA. Here, he's answerable to the shareholders, a very different group of people, a lot of them hedge funds, who want their money returned to them. Mm-hmm. So that discussion is going to be sorted out, I would think, in the next 18 months or so after this case resolves.
Okay, so the settlement, though, it's not going to resolve that, but it's kind of going to set a basis for it.
The settlement is just the first of what I think will be many steps in a very detailed discussion about what our utilities will look like in the future and what emphasis needs to be placed on management and upgrading of the lines. Mm.
What do you think of maybe the option? I'm not sure where this exactly falls when it comes to either publicly owned or not. Just a suggestion from Governor Newsom that maybe perhaps the state should appoint their own like board members to PG&E or in other utilities.
You could. That's going to require a change to the bylaws, PG&E's bylaws, that may require a buy-in by the state to take part ownership interest in PG&E in order to do that. That's certainly one option among many. You have different forms of things called public benefit corporations. You have the municipalities buying up their own chunks. I mean, there are a lot of different ways to do this. What is important is that the discussion is being had, all of which should be pointing towards a safer run utility that does not put us in the position where we have lost an entire section of the year. It used to be called autumn or fall season, and now it's called fire season. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be thinking about how the hell do I get away from Santa Rosa from, say, October 1 to November 12th. I don't want to be thinking that way. I want to go back to pumpkins and leaves changing and Halloween for my kids. And this discussion needs to be made with that in mind of making people safer.
Time of innocence, indeed, beforehand.
Yes.
Yeah. As just about time up here. But again, the filing deadline is now December 23rd for Hanson and Miller Law Group, December 31st overall. They can be reached at 575-1040. Also, their law office is at 415 Russell Avenue in Santa Rosa. Next meeting is this Thursday at 6?
6 p.m. Across from the Kaiser Main Campus in Santa Rosa.
And following that, Saturday at 10 a.m.